it was just such a shock. You know, first the heavy rain and then the roads all opening up and then places that we all think of as very safe. It was more like being hit by a meteor. It's not a slide area. I mean, the trees on that hill are 300 years old. You know, it's of all the places in town, nobody would have thought, gee, Beach Road is a place that there's going to be a landslide.
What was your first awareness of the mudslide?
My husband called. Our lumberyard is over on the beginning part of Beach Road. Our family has a lumberyard and a hardware store there. And he called and he said, something bad just happened. We felt it. And he was with a guy that works at the store and they heard something and felt something. And then they looked out and they could see the debris in Portage Cove, that something had just happened big there. And then, of course, anybody who was on the opposite side of town could see it because it's over on the town side. I mean, you'll see it from every ferry forever going in and out of Haines. And you can see it from when you're around the corner now, that iconic image of Haines right there, just to the south of the fort. There's now a big slide on Mount Riley, basically, on the side. And it's the place where people from Juneau might know where the Battery Point Trail is. It's that road. Cross-country teams for years have run down there. It's a place where you take your dog for a walk at lunchtime. It's not considered dangerous at all or ever a place where there was any concern about that. Ironically, the big slide that we have pretty much every time it rains is out at 19 Mile toward the Eagle Preserve. That one didn't.
This kind of reminds me of many disasters rolled into one. I mean, you have the extreme weather, you have the mudslides, and the aftermath looks just like an earthquake. And then you have flooding and, you know, also the threat of potential tsunamis if you have more slides.
I think the visuals, especially, you know, my daughter lives up at the top of Young Road near the Mount Rapinski trailhead, and that whole road, it's a paved road with a sidewalk down the side. It was just like a gully, a canyon you couldn't drive, just completely churned up, stuff floating here and there. Then further up, my sister, where her roads were, there were just big chasms, cataracts cut right through the road, and water running down these slopes and into people's homes that were then trying to divert them with sandbags. And people who lived up on the hillside were running around with backhoes, digging ditches and trying to divert water from and mud from sliding into people's homes. And we didn't really know what to do at first, I think. And there was a lot of running around. And then there was the big slide. And then all of a sudden, everybody was thinking, well, what if that happens and other places that haven't slid? And so that's when they evacuated lots of neighborhoods on hillsides in town. And all those people then were suddenly in all the hotels, the Aspen and the Captain's Choice, and then at home. And here we had in our house, my daughter and husband and girls and two grandchildren and the dog, and then my sister and her husband and their dog, and my dad is 87. And here we hadn't even been inside together in months. But what are we going to do? Like, you can't just be outside. And everybody in town did that. And fortunately, one of the good things that came from this is we didn't have a COVID super spreader event after it. It almost reminded me of like a ceasefire in COVID. All of a sudden, it was like, what are we going to do? People ran into people's houses.
Well, that is one of the odd things about it, sort of one disaster overlaid over another with all the COVID threats. Did people even think about it at that moment?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, sure, we all did. I think the borough did a really good job of constantly trying to remind people wearing masks and being safe. But people let their guard down. They were hugging. They were crying. There was scenes in every household probably where people were coming in the door and sitting around a table together, and we weren't 6 feet apart.
Initially, there were reports that six people were missing, and of course, two they never did find. What was that like, finding those people that everyone thought was missing?
Well, it all happened very quickly, and you know, Haines is a small place, and there's lots of rumors, and of course, everybody was counting which houses are over there, and we all kind of know, and it wasn't as if people were found like they are in earthquakes in Italy or something. They were found because they called and said, hey, I'm in California or I'm somewhere, I'm not there. So we didn't have the kind of, I don't know, euphoria of discovering that someone was okay. But even then, wasn't much comfort in finding out who was at home either. It was devastating.
I wanted to ask you also about the two people who died, Janae Larson and David Simmons, because I know one of the things that you've done for years is write the obituaries for people in your town. And that must have been really hard. Did you write their obituaries?
Yes, I did. The thing about an obituary is that it's about their life. It was particularly challenging in this case to not focus on their death, because it was so dramatic and kind of the big thing in everybody's mind. And I should say presumed dead. I mean, I think technically the search is still, it hasn't been closed, but their families all acknowledge that they're gone. And Janae Larson, I mean, grew up here. Mom had a daycare, very involved with the school, the booster club, played basketball, sang Don't Stop Believing at her high school graduation. Always wanted to be a teacher and basically put herself through school, a waitress at a diner, the University of Idaho in Moscow. Her main goal was to come back to Haines and be a kindergarten teacher. She won just about every scholarship that was ever given out in town. She was teaching kindergarten at the school, and it was her first year teaching. And she had also just gotten a dog. She had a golden retriever puppy. She had a longtime boyfriend. She and Walker had been dating since they were in high school, and he wasn't home. He just left after lunch to go back to work. So it was crushing. I mean, it was absolutely crushing to the community, and I think the school too, the kids, the teachers who were so proud of her and took her success maybe even with more pride and pleasure because she had been their student too so recently. David Simmons was relatively new to Haines, but he made just a huge impact. He's just 30. His partner was a local girl, real popular, and they were just setting up their home, and he was working for the Haines Economic Development Council, but also had a shuttle business between Haines and Whitehorse. And he was the lederhosen guy. He wore lederhosen and was very funny and light, active, played city league basketball, skied, hiked, fished, hunted, did all those things. And on top of that, he was such a unique guy because he came to Haines just a couple years ago after pretty much traveling the world. He'd circumnavigated the globe 3 times. He'd been to 77 different countries. He spoke Russian, German, and French fluently. He was a Fulbright scholar in Belarus before coming to Haines, and he played semi-pro baseball, and that's how he learned to speak German. I mean, these people were like, not the death. I mean, it doesn't pick and choose. One of my friends is in Haines assisted living, and she said, how come it couldn't have been me? She's 87. She's like, why was it these two? And you can't answer those questions, but it really took the kind of the heart out of a lot of people here.
This whole experience has got to change people's relationship with the land and how safe they feel, how much they trust the land that they call home.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think it shook us to the core. I keep going back to an interview that I watched that David had given to a German travel television station of some sort. And it took place on his land on Beach Road in front of his house in September. And he was sitting on a stump there in the big trees, and you could see the Full Moon Cove, they called it, down below. And a very familiar scene. And he spoke about how he chose to settle in Haines after traveling the world because the very land that he was sitting on spoke to him. He felt a pull that this was something fundamental to his very being, and that this was the place he wanted to be forever and raise a family with his sweetheart and stay here. That echoes, you hear that a lot from people in Haines, and we're all in some ways, I think, reckoning with that. If the very land underneath us or above us is coming apart, where does that put us? At the same time, I think that we all love the place more than ever. So I don't know how to reconcile all that, but that's going to be a challenge going forward.
I read somewhere that this was supposed to be like a 200-year storm, but with climate change, you could see more of these storms more frequently. And some people have said that really the threats to Haines are not unlike many other communities in Southeast Alaska.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been following it. It's been really interesting to have so much geotech work done. We've never been surveyed the way we have been in the last couple of weeks. You know, they're flying over with this stuff called LIDAR that takes pictures in the mountains, and they're seeing fissures and cracks and slides, and they're doing all kinds of tests. And so we're going to know a lot more about our geology than we ever have. And hopefully that information will be used for planning and for rebuilding or rerouting culverts or drainage or systems moving forward. And as you say, I mean, I guess we all have to recognize that at least our precipitation patterns are changing and the vegetation is changing and the seasons are, and getting 3 or 4 feet of snow and then 10 inches of rain may not be such a rare thing in the future, and we need to be prepared for that.
You know, you've written a lot, and people are probably going to expect you to write about this. What will you write about?
You know, the lessons from all this is it's really important to take care of each other and to really be with the present situation. And so I've been kind of deep in that and not really thinking so much about writing it. 20, 30 years ago, I might have thought, well, I got to tell everybody about this while it's happening. And this time I'm so embedded that I couldn't really, and I didn't really want to. I guess part of it is I didn't want to be the bearer of the bad news. I didn't want to tell people what happened, especially with Janae and David. I was kind of, maybe like all of us, had a little magical thinking, hoping that maybe what we were looking at and what we were imagining didn't really happen. And I think that's why the search went on so long.
And of course, you know, the holidays, you know, December is a month normally where you're busy preparing for those special days of family and friends.
The real incredible thing is how well the community came together, how like everybody felt the same way. All of us, even if we didn't have any damage to our own home or have any personal loss in our family, it was like everybody was and still is in a way very tender to each other and all together. And people are just being so nice and so helpful and so good. And that's huge. And it kind of is a lot like Janae and David. They weren't really in one pack or another, and they weren't that kind of people. And so the response to the whole tragedy here, I think the story is like how good it feels to live here right now with the people that are here. And that's not always the case in Haines. We can be, there's been times that I've written about when all I want to do is move, but it's like right now it feels really good to be part of a community that responded to the disaster as well as we did, you know, in 10 days, really, from when it first started raining and then the slide. The kind of almost like just shocking destruction in many neighborhoods was repaired. Roads were fixed and culverts opened up and new power lines strung and school opened and counselors came and people were kept dry and warm and safe in all kinds of ways by all kinds of people. And there's still probably 30 or 40 people that are displaced, especially the Beach Road people, some other homes in town. That's going to be an ongoing financial issue, particularly for them, but trying to get that straightened out. But the initial response to the emergency was really great. And the feeling is still holding. And that's, I think, something that we're all starting to feel good about, as odd as that may sound.
As you describe it, that there's almost sort of a spirituality about this.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I just took a walk and we've had sort of the first really nice day in a long time. It's not too windy. It's not snowing. It's not raining. It's cloudy, but there's some blue sky. The tide was way out and you could just walk in the sand and you weren't slipping and sliding. And I was walking with a friend of mine and we both felt lighter and happy even because the light's coming back and we were in this place right now. It's a comfort too. So I guess that's just the way the world goes around.
So before we leave, any final thoughts?
No, I think I just wanted to wish everybody down there a happy holidays. And I hope that you're taking good care of each other and good care of yourselves and that this time next year we're all going to have a really big party. And we can celebrate lots of things and talk about our sorrows in the past tense, maybe.